I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. By the end of 2019, some 800 movies will have been shown in movie theaters in New York City, probably less than that here in Philadelphia. Some play for just a week or two, like Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, before you can only watch them at home on your hopefully big flat-screen TV. There were lots of sequels this year, of course, and the end of the Star Wars franchise, The Rise of Skywalker. I thought it was a so-so year for movies until I put my list together for today's show, our annual look back at the best of the year. There were some standout performances, some notable directing debuts, good movie making from veteran directors, and some really stellar storytelling. Our guests have put their list together as well. And joining us by phone is Monica Castillo. She's a New York-based film critic and writer whose work has appeared on NPR, in the New York Times, the Washington Post, NBC News, Roger Ebert.com, The Wrap, and elsewhere. Monica, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And here with us in our Philadelphia studios is Neil Oxeman. He's the Radio Times movie fanatic, or as he likes to say, movie nerd. He saw 182 movies this year. He's head of the campaign group here in Philadelphia. He's also a caddy for Tom Watson. And Neil, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning, and good morning to all of you. And we have pulled some clips of movies from our list that we will play during the hour. And we also want your recommendations, so send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call, 1-888-477-9499, with your recommendations from the year. Monica, let me begin with you and begin kind of broadly. Was it a good year for movie making, generally speaking?
I thought that it was a great year for movie making. There's always that question. It really depends on what kind of movies you get out to see and what's available to check out in your area. If you're willing to dig through, you know, the big Netflix and Amazon Prime catalogs to find those gems, there's so many different options now. For me, I was lucky enough to find quite a number of movies that I really enjoyed, movies that I would love to revisit. So I had a great time at the movies this year.
How about for you, Neil? 182?
And I think we're very lucky in Philadelphia, Marty, because we have the Ritz movie theaters with all those screens. We have some landmark theaters. So when these when the big movie chains won't show The Irishman or won't show some of the Amazon type streaming movies because they can't get them booked for 6 or 7 weeks. They only can get them booked for 25 days or so. We get to see them still in Philadelphia. And so I thought it was a really good year. It always is a good year for me because I see almost
movies.
Everything.
Yes.
But I can always find 20 or 30 really good movies.
Well, I always think, and Monica, perhaps this is just the way movies are released. It's kind of either feast or famine. Either there are so many movies and I know I cannot make it to the movie theater to see them all, or there seems like there are weeks that go by where there's nothing that really is going to get me to the movie theater.
Yeah, there's sort of seasons in which, you know, studios will try and save up with the quote-unquote their award contenders will be, and that tends to be in the fall and winter. So it feels like there's a lot more options than say, in August or in the summer months, which is when a lot of the sequels will come out, a lot of the action movies are kind of scheduled there because they figure people want to check out something that's more fun, more, you know, full of explosions at that time.
And for Neil, I know you like to go to the movie theaters.
Yes. My 182 movies are in the theaters. Other than that, you're watching it on TV. That doesn't count. I've been in a movie contest for years with a guy who used to work here, Gene Mason. We used to have to put ticket stubs verify that we saw the movie. Now we trust each other. But for me, movies are this collective thing about seeing it in a big screen. But that's a movie. Now, I'm not arguing against seeing movies on your TV, but I'm a purist. Right. These 182 are movies I saw in theaters.
Good for you. Well, Monica, tell us your top 10 movies for the year. And we have some clips lined up, but just go through your list if you could.
All right. So starting from number one, my favorite movie of the year was the Joanna Hogg's The Souvenir. Number two, Atlantic. 3, Uncut Gems. 4, The Nightingale. 5, Pain and Glory. 6, Us. 7, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. 8, Apollo 11. 9, The Farewell. and 10, Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Now, is there anything that ties any of these things together? Are there certain things you look for?
A kind of a mix of, like, did this movie stay with me long after the credits have rolled? You know, am I still thinking about it? Oftentimes, because I am a film critic, people will just ask me, like, oh, what have you seen lately that you really like? And these are some of the movies that just come to mind first. Like, those are always, like, I'm thinking about them, or they really left an impression on me, or, heck, I just want to see them again because they were so much fun or so interesting, and I enjoyed them. I can't wait for other people to try them as well.
Neil, what's on your list?
Yesterday, the movie, I love the conceit of the movie about the Beatles. The Nightingale, The Same as Monica, which is this Australian movie that takes place in the 19th century, a revenge film. The King. The King is with Timothy Chalamet, and it's Henry V without Shakespeare. Booksmart. Which is a really terrific movie, the female version of Superbad. The Dead Don't Die, Jim Jarmusch's homage to George Romero, a vampire movie with Bill Murray in one of the four movies starring Adam Driver this year. Marriage Story and the Two Popes, which is just totally about acting. I mean, the four main characters, I think the acting is extraordinary. The Mustang, this great film about these prisoners training horses. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is really not a Mr. Rogers movie. It's about this writer at Esquire. And my favorite movie of the year is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where I think DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are as great as they've ever been.
And I should say we have some of those clips from those movies lined up. Let me just give you my list. Shia LaBeouf's biopic, Honey Boy, which had just riveting performances, kind of a scary, explosive relationship between a father, kind of a deadbeat father who had played a rodeo clown, and his son. Shia LaBeouf plays his father, just to add to that. I love Jojo Rabbit, Tico Waititi's film about a boy in Hitler's youth. He's bullied by other kids. Believe it or not, he's got an imaginary friend who's Adolf Hitler. It's a satire. It's a fractured fairy tale about a very frightening time. Little Women that I saw last night, directed by Greta Gerwig. Once Upon a Time, I agree with that. Parasite, I loved. I loved Snowpiercer a couple of years ago, the same director, Bong Joon-ho. It's about a poor family that kind of cons their way into a wealthy family's home, about class and capitalism. The Irishman, Mustang, like you, Neil, The Joker, which I love, Todd Phillips, kind of the backstory of how the villain became how the Joker became the villain in the Batman movies. Beautiful Day, Booksmart, I loved as well. So let me just make sure that listeners can join our conversation again. You heard our list, and send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Monica, we're going to play a clip from The Souvenir. This was a movie you liked, and this is Julie, played by Honor Swinton-Byrne, and Anthony, played by Tom Burke. They're lying in bed together. They're actually having an argument about who's taking up more room in the bed, as couples do.
You came closer to me and took up more of the bed. And you're already, I would say, further over than I am.
That's not true.
It is true.
No, it's not. I haven't got
you
that
have
much.
Bed dysmorphia. And then you accuse me of I wasn't trying to cross any sort of threshold.
I have not got that much room.
You've got a foot on that side.
That's
and
not
I literally
a foot.
Am on a ledge.
So, Monica, I love that clip. What did you like about this movie?
Gosh, I love so many of those little moments because they're so either painfully relatable or just kind of terrifying to watch. The movie is about Honor's character, Julie, who falls in love with, unfortunately, her partner turns out to be a heroin addict. And it's sort of like examining, you know, how someone falls in love with this kind of character, the push and pull and the emotional sort of turmoil that Julie goes through in all of her experience. And it is based on Joanna Hogg's own experience with someone that she dated early in her life while she was still in film school. And I was impressed of the way that it's staged, the way that the story is told. The acting is so good.
Oh, wow.
And it's really impressive to look at. And I'm in awe of this movie. Every time I watch it, I notice something else. I love the way that Joanna Hogg uses mirrors in this movie. I mean, I can go on and how much I can sit and adore this movie, as difficult as it can be, because it is so emotional and it is painful to watch, because there is some part of you that wants Julie to get out of this situation and you want her to be safe. But at the same time, you know, you're watching someone else revisit this own part of their past.
Well, let me play another film, The Nightingale, that back actually you, Neil, liked, as did you, Monica. This is Claire Carroll, played by Aisling Franciazzi. She plays a woman whose husband and baby have been murdered. She's about to set off to avenge their death as her friend tries to stop her. The friend played by Nathaniel Dean. Let's give it a listen.
Stop! Stop! Whoa, whoa, whoa. What in Christ's name are you doing? You don't even know where you're going.
I'll follow the path.
What are you talking about? It's murderous out there. You'll die in a day.
Should I stay home and do needlework?
It's the f***ing wilderness. At least take a guide, for God's sake. There's a guide that I work with. He's smart and he knows the land. Those black ones, they know their way better.
What's wrong with the black? End up in a pot of someone's dinner. What are you trying to do to me?
Claire, please. I can't let you go out there on your own. I couldn't live with myself.
So, Neil, this was on your list.
Yeah, this is an Australian movie. It takes place in the 1800s. It's about, I don't know if they're prisoners or indentured servants. I mean, you know, and this soldier, this officer kills this woman's husband and baby. And she seeks revenge. And an Aborigine guides her through the country to find this guy to seek revenge. It takes place over a few days. It reminds me of John Ford's The Searcher, which, of course, takes place over years, except this place takes place over a few days. It's very hard to watch, but I think it's one of my two or three favorite movies of the year.
And Monica, we're almost up in a break, and I have to say one of the producers started to watch that movie last night, and he couldn't get through it. He said it was just too violent for him. So should people be forewarned?
There was actually a warning when it was screening at the IFC Center in New York City that they had on top of the page before you went and bought a ticket to let people know that there are very hard depictions that happened in this movie, that you should be forewarned, a sort of trigger warning, if you will. And I think that was very smart, because it is very tough, and it's almost, you kind of have to prepare for The Nightingale in a way, because it can really, you know, hurt you if you watch it.
And that's Monica Castillo. She's a New York City-based film critic, and her work has appeared in a bunch of publications, the New York Times, the Washington Post, RogerEbert.com, also on NPR. Also with us, Neil Oxman. He is president and co-founder of the political consulting firm here in Philadelphia, the Campaign Group, and he is our resident film nerd. You can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499 to recommend some of the movies you saw this year. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Monica Castillo and also with Neil Oxman about some of the movies that we loved this year. A comment from Pat. She says, I like the movie Woman at War, especially the use of a small band as a Greek chorus. Let me play a clip from Honey Boy. This was one of those movies, Monica, you talk about movies that just stay with you. You just cannot sort of get out of the spell that they have cast over you. And I felt this way about Honey Boy. And again, Shia LaBeouf's autobiographical movie. It's about an abusive relationship with his deadbeat father, who was a rodeo clown. And in this scene, Lucas Hedges, who plays a young adult Shia LaBeouf, is in rehab. And he's with his therapist, played by Laura San Giacomo. He's been fighting therapy and fighting with her since he got to the facility.
What is this? What are you trying to do? You can't have me in the room knitting for 2 hours.
How are your suds right now?
70.
Okay, let's bring it down. I want you to name 4 objects and let them bring you to the
door,
moment.
Face, light bulb.
Snap the rubber band with each item.
Shoe, shoe, shoe.
One more.
Door. What are you?
Let's try again. Name 4 things and let them bring you back.
Come on, no.
And again, that's a scene from Honey Boy. I should add that a young actor named Noah Jupe plays the young Shia LaBeouf living in a really a down and out motel. And what I loved about it were also all the secondary characters, all the women that stayed at this motel, and also those moments of intimacy and violence. And I just thought was so beautifully captured. Did you see that movie, Monica?
I did. I actually was lucky enough to catch it at Sundance, where the director, Amar Harar, and Shia LaBeouf came in afterwards to do a Q&A. And it was just as emotional as the movie. Yeah, Noah Jupe does an incredible job in the film.
And we have a comment from Dorothy, who says, we nominate, or Locke and Dorothy, we nominate the Peanut Butter Falcon. Very well done, with authentic actors. And Neil, you said that's
well,
star.
Shia LaBeouf. I think about Honey Boy. It was pretty brave of him to make this movie. I mean, obviously, he's got issues as a child actor. I mean, many do. This Peanut Butter Falcon is really a sweet movie that if people out there haven't seen it, it's sort of like there's 8 or 9 of these great little movies that come and go in a week or two at the Ritz's that I could make a whole list of. Give Me Liberty, Dogma, Honeyland, The Public, movies that no one's heard of that I could do a whole top 10 list. And one of them was Peanut Butter Falcon with Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, that's great. Well, here's a movie we all love. This is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Brad Pitt plays stuntman Cliff Booth, who has just picked up a young hitchhiker. We later find out is a member of the Manson family. And the hitchhiker is played by Margaret Qualley. Let's give it a listen.
Are you some old cowboy guy that used to make movies there?
Whoa.
What?
I'm surprised how accurate that description of me really is. Some old cowboy guy that used to shoot movies at Spahn Ranch.
So you used to make westerns at the ranch back in the old timey days?
Well, if by the old timey days you mean television 8 years ago, yeah.
Be an actor?
No, I'm a stuntman.
Stuntman. That's way better.
Why is that way better?
Actors are phony.
Oh.
They just say lines that other people write and pretend to murder people on their stupid TV shows. Meanwhile, real people are being murdered every day in Vietnam.
And that, of course, is directed by Quentin Tarantino. Monica, that was on all of our lists as a movie that we really enjoyed this year. Again, it's set in 1969. The country is going through political, cultural upheaval. You've got the hippies. You've got Charles Manson. You've got Hollywood, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Brad Pitt. And you've got Quentin Tarantino behind the camera, as I think he just does so well. What did you like about it, Monica?
I like so many different things. I mean, there's so many different storylines playing out at the same time. Obviously, you have these two friends who are trying to still make it in Hollywood and keep sort of their stature and the studio system, while television is also kind of taking over and their stars are fading. But at the same time, right next door, you have Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski, who are rising at that moment. And then you have the Manson family in the background, all these different things going on at the same time, and it works really well. I do also want to give like a sort of shout out to Margot Robbie in that role. Yeah. She plays Sharon Tate with such empathy and just, I really loved her performance. And I know some people were kind of upset because she doesn't have a lot of lines of dialogue, but I thought it was still very effective to have her presence in the movie. Just sort of normalized, this is not what we imagine a celebrity is, but she's, you know, packing for a trip or she's doing these really mundane things. She goes to the movie theaters by herself, you know, like many of us do. I thought it was a really sweet performance in this middle of a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Absolutely. And she's also terrific in Bombshell. Neil, what were your thoughts about Once Upon a Time?
Well, I think it's, it's my favorite Brad Pitt movie since Moneyball. I think it's an absolute lock for him to be nominated for Best Supporting Actor, DiCaprio for Best Actor, Tarantino for Best Director, the movie for Best Picture, and certainly probably for Best Original Screenplay. Tarantino can do this stuff. He reimagines history in a certain way. He writes it the way he wants to. And the chemistry between DiCaprio and Pitt is Brad Pitt is DiCaprio's stuntman.
Right.
They've been together forever. It's really extraordinary. It's a movie that I saw twice and just loved every second of it.
Well, and just the camera work and also the use of music. I mean, the sort of pulsating.
Right, right. The soundtrack is wonderful for, you know, if you like music from the 60s, which is where I'm stuck.
1969, I know. It was quite a turbulent year. Let me just give out that phone number and ways that you can join our conversation doing our annual show here on Radio Times, because we love movies and we love talking about them on the radio with you and with our guests. And again, tell us about some of the movies that you enjoyed this year. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Monica Castillo joined us by telephone. She's a film critic based in New York City. Neil Oxman just loves movies. He saw 182 of them this year in movie theaters, and we are talking about some of the films that we enjoyed. Monica, I'm curious about whether there are some performances in Neil feeling as if Once Upon a Time is going to sweep the Oscars. Is it too early to start making some bets on that?
No. Well, right now there's all these Critics Awards going on, and right when we begin the new year, the Critics' Choice is going to happen, and the Golden Globes are right around the corner as well. All of these awards are kind of a lot of people are looking at to them to see whether or not, you know, is Pesci potentially going to come out as a front runner for Best Supporting Actor? You know, is there anything for Robert De Niro in The Irishman? That's one of the big ones in talks right now. Adam Driver in Marriage Story, obviously a number of the performances in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's the kind of fun point for me where it's still a kind of a wild card. It can go in anyone's direction, but we'll wait and see. And this year the Oscars are actually going to be a few weeks earlier than normally, so it'll be at the beginning of February, at the top of the month instead of at the end.
Do you know why?
They shortened the amount of time that studios are allowed to campaign, so they just scrunched up the timeline a little bit. And so I think they only cut 3 weeks off, but, you know, that's 3 weeks that studios can't, you know, take out more ads and can't do more promotional screenings and things like that.
Will they tighten up the ceremony itself?
It's
a late night for us early birds. What's that?
It'll just shorten the awards campaign season, but we'll still be probably talking about a number of these films for a while.
Right, exactly. Were there some real clunkers for you, Neil?
You know, I looked. Matthew McConaughey has made a couple of really bad movies, the names of which have escaped me. You know, this year, and I looked in my film guide, which I have here, my movie diary, and I couldn't do it. I wanted to bring up one thing. If you talk about soundtrack, there were a ton of movies this year about music. There was Rocket Man about Elton John. There was Yesterday about the Beatles. There's this movie called Echo in the Canyon about all these great singers and groups that lived together in Laurel Canyon. There's a movie about Linda Ronstadt. There was a movie about Woodstock, one about Pavarotti, one about Bill Wyman of the Rolling Stones, one about Leonard Cohen, one about David Crosby, one about Judy Garland, where what's-his-name might win an Academy Award, one about Dylan, one about Miles Davis. Those just are the ones that I saw. It was really an amazing year. If you wanted to see movies about music or about people in music, there were at least a dozen really good movies about people in music. It's just an aside. You talk about soundtracks.
Yeah, I did not know that. Let me play a clip from another movie. This is Greta Gerwig's version of Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. Here, Saoirse Ronan plays Jo March, and she's talking with her mother about some of the difficulties that she has been facing in her life about being a woman.
I just feel like women, they have minds and they have souls as well as just hearts, and they've got ambition and they've got talent as well as just beauty. And I'm so sick of people saying that love is just all a woman is fit for. I'm so sick of it. But I'm so lonely.
She does such a beautiful job. Monica, what did you make of Little Women?
I actually haven't gotten around to that one.
Oh, really?
You know, that's the problem with so many releases at the end of the year is you're just trying to catch as catch can.
Well, Neil,
but I do have it on my list to check out in the next few days.
Well, I think you'll like it. Neil and I actually both saw it last night, not together, but saw it in different theaters, but saw it last night.
Look, I think Greta Gerwig has really learned how to direct what she did last year with Lady Bird. I think this is the fourth or fifth iteration of Little Women. I mean, there's the, you know, the famous Katharine Hepburn version, but she really hit it with this. I mean, it's a lot of crying. I did a lot of crying in this. I teared up a number
you.
Of times.
Good
I mean,
for, you.
For a sad, lonely old man, sat in the movie theater and teared up at times.
Well, I was crying as well, and the girl sitting next to me was also crying. We were sort of crying at the same moments. And I have to say, it took me about 10 or 15 minutes to kind of get into the rhythm of the film. And then once I was in there, it was just charming and beautiful, and the acting is
right. There are a lot of flashbacks in it, and they don't really change the look of the women in terms of their age. It's like a 7-year flashbacks,
right.
So they don't look that different. You can't tell sometimes what you know which is a flashback and which is what's going on in it, you know, in the 1870s. It takes place during and after the Civil War,
right.
But she did a good job, and she got really terrific. Acting out of all her females.
And the cinematography is to die for.
Yes.
Here's Mark. He says, I have to disagree with Neil here. I love the movie The Beach Bum with Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, man.
It was the most original take on comedy I've seen in years. Harmony Korine is great. Go ahead, Neil.
That's one of the two movies that I thought was literally – I watched it. I thought it was literally unwatchable. I could not believe that they put this together on the screen. I couldn't believe there was a script, you know.
Fighting
but
words.
But that's why there's, you know, mint chocolate chunk and butter pecan.
Monica, do you get to see bad movies, or are you pretty choosy as a film critic yourself?
Oh, no. Well, unfortunately, as a film critic, I'm assigned most of my movies, so I don't actually get to choose. My editor does that decision for me. So I could get, you know, really lucky and get to review The Souvenir, or I can get really unlucky and review some bad movies.
So what were some bad ones this year for you?
Oh, recently I just panned one that if I had the option to walk out, I would have, but because I was reviewing it, I stayed to the bitter end. Xavier Dolan's The Death and Life of Jack F. Donovan or John F. Donovan, I can't quite remember now. I'm trying to erase the memory from my mind.
That bad.
It was painful. It was, and it has a great cast. It has Natalie Portman. It has Kit Harington. It has a number of people that we would recognize. And unfortunately, the story, the script, everyone just so uncomfortable to watch. It wasn't great. I felt bad for everyone involved. And I couldn't believe it was only 2 hours.
Well, you know what's gotten really panned? Cats.
Cats.
Boy,
cat.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, that's really,
yeah,
you know, just
scary.
People, you know, it's all James Corden who's in it said, he said, quote, I haven't seen it, but I heard it was awful. And he's in it. So, you know.
That tells you.
You know, but I'll go see it. As my friend Gene Mason always says, quote, if they took the time to make it, I'm going to take the time to see it.
Well, good for you. Let me play a clip from the movie Booksmart. It was on my list and on Neil's list as well. These are about two overachieving high schoolers, Amy, who's played by Caitlin Dever, Molly, played by Beanie Feldstein, and here they are declining to attend a summer drama school. And these are two high schoolers who have decided to go through high school and to just get A's in everything and never have any fun.
Yeah, Amy's spending the summer in Botswana helping women make their own tampons.
That's gross.
Well, blood attracts lions. I'm saving lives.
Oh, okay. Well, that's actually noble. I, too, have a fear of big cats.
And I can't, because I'm working all summer and also I don't want to.
You are a Philistine.
Why would you do theater when you could do debate?
Because some of us enjoy working with others.
And some of us know how to win.
Nobody's winning in that outfit.
Sit down, y'all. We got work to do.
Booksmart.
It is one. It's about these two women, two
girls,
seniors
really.
In high school. The movie takes place literally over about 48 hours, except for the last few minutes. And these two girls, Beni Feldstein, who is Jonah Hill's sister, and
Caitlin Dever,
right. and they're obsessed with where they're going to college, and they both get into Yale, I guess. And there's a scene in the bathroom where they're in the ladies' room, and there are three other, actually a boy and a couple of girls in the room as well. And you know, they think these kids are slackers. And they said to him, "Where did you get into college?" And one kid says Harvard, one kid says Georgetown, I think one kid says Princeton or Yale or whatever. And Benny Feldstein says, "Well, you didn't care about this or whatever." And she said, "No, it's just not all we cared about." And it was one of the great right. lines that Olivia Wilde directed this, her first director. I think she did a wonderful job directing this.
What did you, Monica, again, we're about a minute before our break here. I happen to like Caitlin Dever. She's an actor that I've seen on TV and in a couple of movies as well. But what did you make of Booksmart?
Oh, I adored it. It was so funny. If I could have done a longer list, I think Booksmart would have shown up on a top 20 or top 30. It was so delightful, so quick paced and just zany. And I enjoyed the entire cast, the ensemble works, all the different high school kids. And Carrie Fisher's daughter, Billy Lord, I believe, plays this sort of, mythical, but really funny personality who appears at all of the parties. She is that person who gets into all of the parties. And it's just so fun to watch.
And that's Monica Castillo. Again, she's a New York City-based film critic and writer. Neil Oxman with us here in our Philadelphia studios. And he is a political consultant, or has a political consulting firm called The Campaign Group here in Philadelphia. Loves movies, saw 182 of them this year. I saw a bunch, although not 182, but we are talking about the movies that we love this year. We want to hear from you. Call us 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. More after this short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe-Wang talking with Neil Oxman and Monica Castillo about some of the movies that we have enjoyed this year. Here's one from Neil Oxman's list, The Dead Don't Die. Actors Adam Driver, Bill Murray, and Chloe Sevigny play police officers who are being attacked by zombies. Do I have that right? Yeah. Just as a zombie played by Carol Kane emerges from a drain cell.
Is this some sort of epidemic or what?
It's zombies.
What are you saying?
Well, it's the undead. They've been reanimated. Caused by the Earth having been pulled off its axis. Caused by the polar fracking.
But the authorities and energy people keep saying that's not true. Really? Ah! Oh, my God! She's alive?
No, she's not. She's just undead.
Chardonnay.
Holy shit. Did she just say Chardonnay?
Yeah, she did. Look out, kids. Hey, little Mallory.
Chardonnay.
That's Jim Jarmusch. Now, why is this on your list?
Well, it really is. As I said earlier, it's an homage to George Romero, who did the most famous early zombie movie. Bill Murray plays a sheriff, and Chloe Sevigny and Adam Driver play deputies in a little town in, I think it's Western Pennsylvania or in Ohio. And it's just a typical zombie movie, and it's funny because it's Bill Murray. When's Bill Murray ever been bad in a movie?
Sure.
And I think it's really entertaining, and it's worth finding now on whatever streaming service one has and watching it.
He says with disdain.
Yes.
Monica, I was counting up how many times I saw Adam Driver in a movie this year besides The Dead Don't Die. There's The Report.
Oh.
There's Marriage
the
Story,
report.
And then I just saw him in Star Wars.
Kylo Ren.
The guy got around.
He does four great jobs in all four amazingly different roles, except, of course, he walked out in an interview with Terry
he
Gross.
Did.
How do you do that?
I don't know. That's a whole other thing there. But, Monica, he's having a pretty good year. Scarlett Johansson also. Yeah.
Yeah, no, lots of demand. I hope to keep seeing him in more stuff. I think he's a great actor. And if you were lucky enough to make it out to Broadway, he was also on Broadway there for a while.
Wow.
And the play Burn This, the revival of Burn This.
Interesting. Well, there's certain actors that are sort of appear as themselves, and then and we'll get to Adam Sandler in just a moment. Let me just read a comment from Ike, who says, "The Joker, hands down, was the film of the year, a movie that perfectly encapsulates the era, including the ridiculous controversy around it." And it was on my list. I just thought
Joaquin Phoenix is beyond unbelievable in that movie. I mean, you know, losing all that weight but he does that.
Or even
for
his posture.
Role. Yes. Yeah. The movie had some mixed reviews because of the violence, but it's made $1 billion worldwide. So, you know, they sort of had their last laugh about it because people have accepted it.
Yeah. And Monica, there was also this homage to the King of Comedy in there, which I thought was really sort of interesting. Not everyone, I think, would necessarily see it, but there was. I also saw a number of psychologists talk about sort of what was at stake here and how a child who was neglected and abused can grow up to, not all, of course, but can grow up to be a villain like the Joker. Any thoughts from you, Monica?
Yeah, those were certain elements that didn't quite work for me in the movie. And actually, I felt that I wasn't too enamored with Todd Phillips' direction. I thought the movie was somewhat messy in certain points. And then obviously there's that big conversation about the depiction of mental illness and how it can lead to violence. And, you know, there's bigger things the movie tries to bring up, but then I think it gets its own message a little muddled towards the end when it turns more towards anarchy. I didn't leave the theater feeling great after that one. And I think he does pay a lot of homage to the King of Comedy and obviously a lot of Taxi Driver in there as well. Mm-hmm. So you can tell that at least Todd Phillips, you know, watched his Scorsese movies before embarking on this project.
Well, we should talk. I don't have a clip, but we should talk about Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. I believe 209 minutes, which is more than 3 hours, 3.5 hours. Al Pacino playing Jimmy Hoffa, Robert De Niro playing Frank Sheeran, a criminal, a hitman, Joe Pesci as Russell Bufalino. Monica, what did you make of The Irishman?
I quite enjoyed it. I did not feel those 3 hours at all. I felt like it moved wonderfully. I was riveted. All those characters and the way that, you know, things change and people betray each other. It's very fascinating to see it all play out. And then obviously for those of us who've been watching Scorsese's work for a long time, to see, you know, a number of his greatest collaborators come back and do this is, you know, really exciting.
And the CGI sort of worked. I mean,
because it started with De Niro as an old man in a nursing home, Frank Sheeran in his 80s, and then they went, which you've seen. You've seen lots of movies where people are old, and then they do go back to where they're younger. I thought it was seamless. And I think Monica referred earlier, Joe Pesci is, I think, clearly the favorite to win Best Supporting Actor. He'll certainly be nominated, but he played somebody very different than he usually plays. He played this Russell Bufalino, this mobster from – alleged mobster from upstate Pennsylvania. But he played him very understated, and he did a really, really terrific job.
Well, it's interesting how, you know, mobster movies just live on. I mean, they're – I guess because they are epic in so many ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Godfather 1 and 2.
Good and Evil, all of that.
Know, right, exactly. And – Scorsese knows how. I mean, and as you know, Scorsese knows how to get acting. You know how to get these people to fulfill how great actors they are.
Well, let me play a clip from Jojo Rabbit. I put this on my list. It's a sort of a fractured fairy tale set in Germany, 1944. Obviously, a frightening time. In this scene, a young boy who's a member of the Hitler Youth refuses to kill a rabbit as part of the initiation ceremony. Adolf Hitler is his imaginary friend, and he's consoling him. The boy Jojo is played by Roman Griffin Davis, and Hitler is played by the movie's director, Tico Waititi.
Poor Jojo. What's wrong, little man?
Hi, Adolf.
Want to tell me about that rabbit incident? What was all that about?
They wanted me to kill it. I'm sorry. I couldn't.
Don't worry about it. I couldn't care less.
But now they call me a scared rabbit.
Let them say whatever they want. People used to say a lot of nasty things about me. Oh, this guy's a lunatic. Oh, look at that psycho. He's going to get us all killed. I'll let you in on a little secret. The rabbit is no coward.
It's a wild ride. I have to say, for people who haven't seen that movie, Monica, what are your thoughts?
A wild ride is right. I ended up a little bit more mixed on the movie, but I did like a lot of the performances. I thought Taika Waititi as Hitler is just so bizarre. You know, he's wearing white face makeup, and, you know, the emotions and the way that he plays them is very loose and gangly. It's a very, you know, sort of physical, rooted in physical comedy. But it does get a little strange, and there's a twist in the story I don't want to spoil for anyone, and that's where it kind of soured for me.
Fair enough. I'll let that hang out there. How about for you, Neil?
Well, no, I really love this director. A couple of years ago, I put one of his small movies. He made two small movies, one about vampires and one about searching for a kid out in New Zealand. And then he makes, you know, with no credentials at all, they're making these two small films. They gave him the budget to do the last Thor movie, which was really funny and did a good job. And Scarlett Johansson plays a resistor in this and is really good.
Absolutely. Let me just give out that phone number again to join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Surely you have seen some movies this year. Monica, I'm going to play a scene from Adam Sandler's Uncut Gems. And he's a jeweler, Howard Ratner. He's talking with retired basketball star Kevin Garnett, playing himself, about obtaining the opal stone from Ethiopia. And this is from the film Uncut Gems.
Check this out. Oh, no. All right. So these are black Jews, all right? They're stranded in the middle of Ethiopia. It's deep.
Stranded?
Yeah, look at it. They got nothing. They don't got cars. They don't got. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, what the? What are these guys wearing? Look, it's on the Torah there. It's everywhere, right? Just, where do these guys get precious black opals? That's what that is.
The black opal.
I do my research. These guys live near the Whalo mines, which primarily is red opals, which aren't worth. Okay. But these you can't get your hands on these things. You understand?
Really?
So look, I say to myself, how do I get a hold of these guys? And I managed to track these guys down. I buy one from them. What is that? That's right here. That's the rock. That's the rock. That's the stone.
Holy I got snow. Look how this is winking.
A lot of beeps there. Monica, this was on your list. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised that you found a clip that wasn't entirely beeped out. yeah, this is that kind of movie. It's Adam Sandler plays. It's really sort of slick, smooth talker, a jewelry dealer in the Diamond District in Manhattan. And he's in this sort of tragic story because he's, you know, he's trying to wheel and deal and trying to, you know, stealing from Peter to pay Paul, kind of all these backroom deals in order to, you know, make something. And he, you know, he always has this new goal for himself, but unfortunately, like, he can't gamble his way out of, you know, everything. Mm. And it's done by the Safdie brothers, who are a really interesting pair of directors. The music is really incredible. I had the good fortune to interview a composer, Daniel Lopatin, about that score, because it is kind of a little nerve-wracking. If you do watch the movie, you might feel a little anxious or nervous. That's because everything is cut so quickly. The editing is really fast-paced. You feel like you're on this, you know, sort of adrenaline rush watching the movie while he's trying to do all of these things to come out on top.
Well, Monica, it's interesting you say that because one of the Radio Times producers went to see Uncut Gems, and she said it was just, talk about nerve-wracking. She felt like she was just being sort of shattered with all the input. How about
for
you, Neil?
It's really frenetic. I mean, that's the word. Sandler speaks very quickly, it's sort of a stereotypical of what you would think sort of a New York jewelry diamond merchant would be like. And the Safdie brothers do that. They made a movie last year with Robert Pattinson, and it is really fast paced. It just, you know, there's very you know, sometime in movies, it doesn't even matter in Star Wars, you know, you get relief, you get time to breathe, you know, things slow down. There's
not
no slowing
one.
Down in this thing. This thing just goes on for 2 hours and it never stops.
Well, this may be the opposite movie. This is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Neil, it was on your list, featuring Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers. And in the scene, Mr. Rogers is being interviewed by a journalist from Esquire named Lloyd Vogel, and he is played by Matthew Rhys. Let's give it a listen.
This piece will be for an issue about heroes. Do you consider yourself a hero?
I don't think of myself as a hero. No, not at all.
What about Mr. Rogers? Is he a hero?
I don't understand the question.
Well, there's you, Fred, and then there's the character you play, Mr. Rogers.
You said it was a play at the plate. Is that what happened to you?
I'm here to interview you, Mr. Rogers.
Well, that is what we're doing. Isn't it?
And Mr. Rogers is referring to a black eye that he got from a fight, but he obviously didn't tell Mr. Rogers how he got it.
Well, you put this on your list. You talk about it. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And I have to say, as this was many years ago when my son was little and he would watch Mr. Rogers, he called him Wodger. And he believed that Mr. Rogers was really talking to him. And that was, he would watch Sesame Street and he would have fun. But there was something very special happening on TV. And as a kind of a cynical mom at the time, I thought, what is going on here? And I think the movie captures it.
Right. You know, 2 years ago, there was a documentary about Mr. Rogers, which I think all of us might have had on our top 10 lists. This isn't, you know, they're talking about Tom Hanks being nominated for Best Supporting Actor because it really isn't quite a Mr. Rogers movie. It's a movie about this journalism and this journalist at Esquire.
Cynical.
who is supposed to write just a 400-word little essay about Fred Rogers and ends up writing a 10,000-word cover story, which is really about his journey and this passage that he's going through. Stars Matthew Rhys, who was in The Americans, married to Carrie Russell, who's right. In Star Wars.
Yes, I saw
it for that. But I thought it was a really sweet movie. And of course, Tom Hanks, you know, you can't say anything bad about Tom Hanks. And it's a perfect – I mean, who else is going to play Fred Rogers other than Tom Hanks?
Monica, about 30 seconds before we have to end the show, any final thoughts either about Mr. Rogers or anything else on the horizon?
I also really enjoy it. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I love the director, Marielle Heller. I would encourage people to also check out the movie that she did last year, Can You Ever Forgive Me, with Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant, which was also quite good, also dealing with writers. It was a good year for movies. I hope people will also check out the other ones on our list that we didn't get around to talking about, because it was also a great year for documentaries. It was a great year for international movies. There's a lot of good stuff out there to watch. And don't be afraid to give new movies a try, even if they don't come from a sequel or an established IP.
Well said. Monica Castillo, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Monica Castillo is a New York City-based film critic. Neil Oxman, thank you very much as well.
Thanks, Marty.
And he's president and co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia. He joins us this time, I forget how many years we've been doing this, but to talk about movies. Since the 90s, he also caddies for golfer Tom Watson. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And we'll post our list of movies that we liked on our Facebook page so you can check it out. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen, with help today from Susan Greenbaum. I'm Marty Moskowain. Thank you for joining us.